So what I will discuss today is the physics of germanium production at RIC. I will briefly go through the SPS only to sort of use it as an example of what we need to do as a plan for the future. Axel has gone through the detail. So what I will describe is how Phoenix and STAR are planning to actually measure germanium at RIC, and I will go through some detail of the experimental capabilities. And then I will ask, you know, what do we need to do in order to actually determine whether we have suppression or enhancement, and which mechanism is causing those, and how can we disentangle the various factors contributing to the production. And as I go along, I will try to show what experiments can do when, to give people an idea of when some of this measurement will be available. Oops. So what we have in Phoenix, we have two central spectrometers which are used to measure the electron and specifically the decay of J psi or psi prime into plus and minus is something which will be available very soon. But and then we have two forward spectrometers which will measure the decay of J psi into mu mu. And here on the right hand side, there is a picture of our acceptance as a function of rapidity and phi. What we see is that we have full azimuthal coverage in the muon, partial azimuthal coverage in the electrons, and the muon are in forward backward rapidity space. I don't know why, but it's so slow. Something is wrong. Sorry. So we measure electron in Phoenix. We use three detectors to do PID. It's the Rich, the TEC, and the EMCAL, which are sensitive to different momentum regions. The bulk of the identification is made by the Rich. And we have good momentum and mass resolution provided by our charged particle tracking, which is done using the time expansion chamber, per chamber, and Rift chamber. Here is an example of electron identification. And this is, for example, the E over P ratio, which is the ratio between the energy measured in the electromagnetic calorimeter and the momentum as measured by the charge tracking. And this is done, can be done with all charge tracks. And as you can see, we have no hint of a possible electron signal at E over P of 1. But once we require that there is a ring in the reach, we have actually a clear electron peak, which is shown in red, and in blue is the combinatorial background. So Akiba has already described our first measurement of electron in year one, and we expect that, and the detector worked very well, so we expect we'll have good electron identification from the upcoming data set. And also, in the second run, we have instrumented the south muon arm, and this will allow us to do a muon measurement of the J psi and psi prime decay. And we have three tracking stations in the magnetic field, which are used to track, determine the momentum of the particles. And in the back, we have five layers of steel absorber and Ryoichi tube, which are used for identification. And this has a low energy cutoff at 2 GeV, that is momentum. We have muon with momentum above 2 will actually penetrate the steel and be identified by the muon. So if we actually put together what is our acceptance for in the electron and muon arm, what we see is that in each of the muon arm, we are actually detecting 4% of the decay in J psi, while in the electron arm, we have an acceptance of 0.8. The difference is in mass resolution. The electron arm has a better mass resolution given that there is no absorber, so there is no multiple scattering. And we can actually distinguish the J psi and psi prime with an accuracy of 20 MeV, or with a resolution of 20 MeV, while in the muon arm, we have a 105 MeV resolution, which is more comparable to what NA50 has. We also have a 1.7% of and 3% of acceptance for the upsilon in in the electron and muon arm, but this actually, because of the production rate, will make the upsilon measurement at trick will be actually very hard. And this is actually shown as a simulated performance of the muon pair mass and electron invariant mass, which we stop at the jth psi. But here we can see that the upsilon production, expected production of upsilon to jth psi, this is obviously in absence of anomalous suppression, and is 10 to the 3. So this upsilon sample will actually be pretty small and will require a luminosity upgrade to actually do a detailed measurement of the upsilon. In fact, here I have some numbers of what are the expected rate. I'm assuming no anomalous suppression, and this is cross-section values from the R-scattering collaboration, R-probe collaboration, and the idea is that in the muon arm, what we can measure 600,000 jpsi in a full year of in a year of Rick running at full luminosity, and if in the electron arm, we can measure 50,000, and we have a few hundred of the order of a few hundred to a thousand upsilon in the muon arm. One of the interesting capability of Phoenix is that we can actually measure germanium both in regions with different energy density, as I show here with a DN eta plus from Brahms, on which I overlaid crudely what is the acceptance of the electron arm in green and the two muon arms in brown. And so actually we can do sort of a self-consistent test trying to see if by changing the particle density actually changes, if the suppression is actually a function of the local density and so we can do any in-place test. Star can also measure jpsi through their electron decay, and it has an acceptance of two units of rapidity, plus or minus one, and full azimuthal coverage. The particle identification in star is done by using the electromagnetic calorimeter mostly, and with some help from the DEDX, both in the TPC and SVT. Here I'm showing what is the acceptance, predicted acceptance for star in rapidity for different slices of transverse momentum. In star, a jpsi is accepted if both electrons have a momentum greater than 1.5 GeV, and the electron fall within the EMCAL acceptance, and this caused the acceptance to actually be a fairly steep function of the PT of the jpsi. Nevertheless, they can collect a sample of 40,000 jpsi in 1 year of running at full luminosity with a signal to background of 1 to 3 for PT greater than 1.5 and 3 to 1 for PT greater than 2. Now, the program is to study jpsi production in AB collision, that is in heavy nuclei, and one can think of in a simple-minded plan, which is to say that what will be this jpsi, this cross-section function of, will be clearly function of A and B, the size of the nuclei involved. There will be a prod, then there will be a term which is the elementary nucleon-nucleon cross-section, and a factor which could be suppression, just because of, like, you know, the NA50 data, we always think of suppression due to either the initial state, that is gluon shadowing, or the final state, which suppression, which could be due either to the nuclear absorption or to some medium effect or QGP. So the first thing that we would like to ask is, how well do we know the elementary nuclear-nuclear cross-section at Rick energies, or in general? And so one goes and look at what has been done in the past. There has been a lot of progress in the past 10 years. when basically the theory, the QCD based model, which were evolved into this new NRQCD formalism, where you can factorize the heavy flavor, the heavy quark creation into terms which depends on, into a term which is short distance, and then basically the bound state formation, which is a long distance problem. And within this framework, they have been able to sort of reproduce the tevatron measure total cross section. And in fact, this is when the so-called colored singlet, what they found was that the colored singlet is the dominant contribution to the total cross section at IPT, I should say. Sorry?
Colorotype.
Yes, sorry. And this was sort of a big change with the previous theories. There is still a big mystery in the tevatron data, because more recently the tevatron has actually measured the polarization of J psi, and there is a measurement on psi prime too, which I'm not showing. But the idea is that within the color octet model, one would expect a transversely polarized, which has not been observed in the data. And there are other measurements too, in actually done both in PA and ETERA, which are in agreement with the color, sorry. The color tet is confirmed both by ERA data and LAP data nowadays, but still there is this issue of the polarization, which has not been solved. There has been a modification of the power counting, of the NRQCD, where one can change the power counting to a different scale. I've seen a paper saying that there might be a way of reconciling this data with a different power counting, but the idea is PP collision will provide valuable information, because there is still more data coming in, but there is also a lot of uncertainty at this stage on the basic production mechanism. So if we just average over spin during PP running, we can collect a sizable sample. In fact, once we trigger, as we can do in Phoenix, both in dielectron and the muon in PP collision, we can actually collect of the order of the same size sample than in a gold year for a 2-month PP running year, for 2 months of running at full luminosity in PP. So the data from RIC will actually provide very valuable information to test some of these issues. We can make polarization measurement and see what we see, and in fact will be an important test even to do in gold in order to actually confirm or disprove whether a similar process is going on. This is the charmonium suppression has been measured at the SPS, and I'm just showing here this plot as a function of L, where for a long time we have known that there is a nuclear absorption which has been measured in PA and light ions, and there is an anomalous suppression which appears with the lead data. Now, I feel that the question is still open, whether this suppression is hadronic origin or QGP. A lot of I'm showing here, just to be fair, two models, and actually I picked one of the most recent hadronic models just because it agrees well with the data. And the idea is that there is a way of reproducing the bulk of the data by using a simple hadronic multiple scattering based model or QGP, and the idea is that what can we do at RIC in order to understand what's happening once we do this measurement. Clearly, there has been a lot of data in PA, for example, at the trivatron in 866, that we do need PA collision to disentangle what is the cold nuclear matter suppression versus the hot deconfined nuclear matter. And if we actually compare charmonium production with open charm, we can distinguish between gluon shadowing, which will contribute to the open charm production rate, with the actual nuclear absorption of charmonium as it goes to the nuclear medium. And so both in we need to do this kind of measurements, but the question is not finished, because as we know, more recently at RIC, There has been several models which have, are predicting GPSI enhancement, both from an hadronic coalescence or dynamical with QGP, but the idea is that one can expect at Rick energies where we are in central collision 10 charm pair per event, we do expect a production of JPSI due to this coalescence, which is comparable to the actual JPSI production due to R scattering. And so it will be important for us to actually determine what the open charm cross section is. We can do it through the IPT lepton, as Yasuyuki has shown yesterday, but ultimately, what we really want to do is to measure open charm directly, and Phoenix Upgrade is developing a silicon tracking detector which will be able to look at displaced vertices, and this is one of the plots, and actually measure the open charm directly in the years to come. What do we expect to see in the more near future? For round two, we have had 170 million events sample, with muon bias, mostly triggered either by electron or by muons. In absence of anomalous suppression, and I'm using the same the probe collaboration cross section I used before, what we expect, an alpha of 0.92, what we expect is of the order of JPSI into E and the order of 500 JPSI into mu mu. So from this year running, we expect an observation at best of, and a proof of principle. And there is clearly large uncertainty, but because clearly that could be completely suppressed, it could be enhanced, who knows? This is.
That's the number reconstructed?
Yes. And there is a large uncertainty. I mean, we are still in the process of, analyzing the data. There is, we really haven't seen evidence of what's happening. What's happening in the near future? We will have, what we would like to do is to have a long run with gold-gold and a series of short light ion runs. We want to explore the production as a function of n-binary, and the best way to do it is to actually do it changing the ion species. For example, in 1 month, or actually 1/10 of Rick year, which is 3 weeks of running for the light species, we can get statistic which is comparable to what we could get in 1 year of running in gold-gold, simply because, and again, these are all cross-sections without any anomalous suppression or enhancement. I mean, this is just our baseline. But the idea then one can compare, and this is actually what is shown here, is the number of binary collisions for various ion species, and one can see that to fully explore the number of binary species, the best way is to actually change ion species and go from gold-gold to iodine to copper to silicon-silicon. And in all of this, the other thing that clearly is in the work is a PA or DA running, because this is definitely essential to understand what the hadronic absorption of plan. So what is the experimental plan to establish that we have observed either suppression or enhancement which results from a QGP? We have to study charmonium as the production as a function of PT, centrality, lighter system, and versus a control. Open charm will be the first one available to us just because of a cross-section issue. And definitely in the longer run, it's one of the finished goals is to also use the upsilon, and which is supposed not to be suppressed or enhanced just because there are not enough bees, and as we learned on Monday, the upsilon should survive up to 2 TC or something. I forgot. So the detail, how can the theorist help? we need detailed production, you know, prediction in order to actually compare to whatever data set and trying to disentangle some of this issue. Rapidity dependence, DN data or multiplicity dependence. What are the consequences of some of this suppression or enhancement as a function of other observable? And if we really want to use the JPSI as an indicator of the Cherepsov transition, JPSI or Psi prime, I should say, which we can measure at the same time, we need also detailed calculation to estimate at which temperature various Qualconium state melt, because in principle we can measure them all. Psi and Psi prime we can measure, and then we should try to do a systematic study. So to conclude, Phoenix and STAR have the capability to measure germanium production at 3. We have a wide coverage, high statistic, and a variety of beam combination thanks to Rick. Assuming that we get enough running time, the future looks bright, and both theorists and experimentalists have a lot of work to do.
Give me really an easy job. Okay, so I open the floor. Can you give
a transport moment on brand in which
all PTs for electrons, I'll let me show. Yes. Let me, I have actually the slide in one of the, if I can just. I showed the STAR one, and I will. Okay, this is the muon acceptance as a function of momentum, which goes down to 2, as I said in my talk, and the electrons we are basically measuring everything for JPSI because we measure down to 200 MeV. Yes.
So I'm. Is it on? Yes. So I'm going to ask a naive question, which is really not intended to be a question for you, but given we have time to provoke the theorists in the room, Marcia kept talking about suppression or enhancement. Are the theorists really so unsure of the prediction for Rick as to be not sure whether it's suppressed or enhanced? would any of the theorists in the room, including, well, people sitting near me, for example, care to comment? Is it really a fair statement of our uncertainty at this point that we don't know whether they're going to be suppressed or enhanced?
I have a question directly to this speaker.
I like better questions directed to the theorist, actually. Especially that one. I like to know the answer.
As you said, every time we measure polarization of JPSI, we find a big surprise. I mean, at high PT, at Tevatron, instead of becoming transverse, it becomes longitudinal. The same thing in PA, when you go to very large XF, it becomes also longitudinal. So it would be interesting to add to your list of measurements also polarization measurements. And so the question is whether you and STAR would be able to do this, and in what range of PT?
I think going to IPT will require high statistic. We have done some study, but not detailed enough, that we'll definitely be able to measure polarization. The issue is, you know, if you have 50,000 JPSI and you're looking for the IPT, like, what do you mean for IPT? We go out to 2 or 3 GeV, and then you cannot measure polarization if the end of the spectrum is at 3 GeV there. Yeah. No, but we'll definitely be able to do it. The issue is it's not, definitely not this year, and it's not probably, you know, the first thing we can do. Will require high statistics.
Question one, just trivial. I thought I got from your slides that your definition of a Rick year was an uninterrupted 30-week run. Is that correct?
8 months.
8 months uninterrupted.
50%, yes, 8 months. Yeah, that's the, right. What we call the nominal Rickier, which is eight months.
That's a bit optimistic for Rickier, but the other question is a more serious one.
Yes.
Was when you talked about what to normalize the JSI yield to, you mentioned a number of things, but it seems to me that the really, the truly best thing, but this is a question, it's a statement, but really it's a question, is the open charm. Because if you're talking about the thing dissolving by virtue of device screening, what's left is still open charm. So the ratio of JSI to open charm would seem to me to be the best measurement. But that may be overly naive. And could you or someone else comment about that?
The issue is that the ratio of PSI to charm is 1 to 1,000 or something of that order. And so you're trying to measure, like, you know, a deviation of a very small fraction in some sense. And so you have, percentage-wise, let's say, you know, how well can you have an uncertainty on charm too, which a statistical certainty which will be big. So but not the number of charm, the suppression. You see, I think if you change this, if the JPSI suppressed by 30%, it only increases the number of charm by 30% of. The ratio changes by 30%. Oops.
So the other experimental handle we might have is JSI versus reaction plane. So both Star and Phoenix should be able to do that. And my question, and it may not be to you, but it may be to the theorist in the audience, is how robust is this latest sort of hadron absorption calculation at CERN? Is that generally accepted as a realistic calculation, or is there some criticisms around for that? How do I read Shuanwei's calculations at the moment?
The theorist should comment. I don't think I'm qualified.
You're helping me promote the theorist.
Yes.
Yes, I will certainly follow Dima's example, and I will have my own question. But first, I do have a comment on what Jack said. I completely agree with what you said, and I think there was a slight misunderstanding between you and the speaker. I mean, Jack is not saying that you want to measure the suppressed JPSIs in the open charm rate, but rather what he is saying is that the natural reference frame for JPSI suppression is open charm, and I think that is without the slightest doubt correct, and the only reason it was not done so far is because our experimental friends could not measure open charm. But the moment they can, that is certainly the ideal reference.
I think that's also probably the only reference we have really a trick, just because we don't have any Drellian, so, or and, very little. So.
And my question was, you showed the for the PA data that exist, you showed the alpha variation with XF, that the nuclear suppression gets much stronger at large XF.
Yes.
Is it at all possible for Rick to get into such a regime? I mean, when you showed the Brahms plot with your regions, everything seems to sit in a region where it's rather flat, or was
but
that
in
wrong?
Fact, there was a recent paper, I forgot, you know, was actually a model prediction which agrees with this 866 data and shows that the forward and backward spectrometer in RIC will have a very different gluon distribution, and so we will be able to test in a very easy way, actually, in some sense, free of systematics, because we have almost two identical detectors in these two regions.
That
and the effect is huge, actually, according to this. I forgot the name.
But that would certainly be extremely useful, because that's one of the things that the CERN experiment has not been able to do at all, is to measure the rapidity or XF coverage to an extent where it really matters.
I have a purely experimental question, but before I ask that, I have to say something about Krishna's challenge, because of course if there are, if a plasma is produced at Rick, what we I think all believe, that the tramonia will be suppressed. The tramonia will be suppressed. That is, I think, nobody argues with that. And we saw different patterns on how that might be suppressed. The argument is what actually is going to be observed, because you still have all the charm quarks around. And of course, what happens to these charm quarks at hadronization is the issue. If you then look at that and make estimates, and we have our own estimate, it seems unavoidable that if this number of charm quarks is large, that you will get some shape size from the charm quarks at hadronization. Yeah. Now, within our own framework, this adds up to at least equal to the unsuppressed rate. It may be even somewhat bigger, but it's hard to estimate in detail. Now, after having commented on that issue, now my experimental question is, 4 or 5 years ago in Phoenix, there was still discussion of potentially measuring also the Chi-C, which would be a very important observation in this whole context. Has this been followed up, and is there a chance to do that?
I think we can definitely do it in PP or PA at lower multiplicity. At high multiplicity, we cannot measure the soft photons, but I feel that now with the upgrades, or we go with an inner detector and maybe hadron blind detector near the vertex, then we can actually try to do the photon conversion, measure the conversion of the photon into 2 electrons, which, for example, has been done in CTF. And so I think, in some sense, it's not something which will be done in the next 2 or 3 years, but definitely it's in the work.
It should not be forgotten anymore.
Yeah, I actually...
Let me perhaps also, make a somewhat provocative statement. I mean, you seem to expect theorists to present either a nuclear physics computation of charm suppression or a quark gluon plasma computation, and that should be clearly distinguishable, and you can measure which one is right. If we are lucky, it could be like that. But we should well be aware that if the transition is actually a crossover and we are not so far from the critical temperature, this really implies that there should be both a valid nuclear computation and a quark gluon plasma computation. And if you take into account that, in addition, you do not have perfect thermal equilibrium, you have a lot of time dependence and so on, which tend to wash out things. If we are unlucky, we may be in a situation where both descriptions give a relatively reasonable description, and you will never be able to decide.
Unfortunately, yes.
Well,
let
me put it a little differently. If it's a crossover, then I would say not that both descriptions should agree. I would say that both descriptions should fail, in the sense that in the crossover region, neither, by definition, a hadronic calculation nor a quark gluon plasma calculation should be quantitatively accurate. I mean, they should both fail there.
Depends how much you put in.
But I actually want to ask Peter a question. I have the mic, so I'm gonna. So suppose I'm gonna pick numbers out of the air. Suppose that at RIC, for every 1,000 pions, there is 1 open charm meson. I don't know if that's a reasonable number, but so 1 in 1,000. Is that about right? 1 in 1,000. Then just sort of the naive argument for how many J size you should get from final state coalescence is 1 in 1,000 of the open charms, because if there's 1 in 1,000 charm mesons, then it's just the chances that one charm finds an anti-charm to combine to make a J psi is, it's much more likely they find a pion than by a factor of 1 in 1,000. That's not correct?
No, that's not correct. If you know one thing to calculate, is the thermal Boltzmann rates for this situation, and that just tells you exactly what should come out. And in fact, if this is true, it is not only that shape psi is modified, it's also true that the D mesons come out differently from the way you would calculate them in hard collisions. And that is another thing you can test. You get different, completely different ratios for D plus to D zero as what you would calculate in PP or measure in PP collisions.
Okay.
I'm much of that.
I don't think I need a mic. My students usually tell me that, so I'm just going to make a comment. And the comment is that yesterday we saw a very nice talk from Yasu Kipibo, which is now Phoenix published data, which estimates open charm. And you've heard from Marzia that even though the yield of JSI from this most recent run is woefully pitiful, there will be a measurement. So the window of opportunity for a theorist to be predicting rather than post-dicting is very short, and I hope that we see predicting.
So I think I can also do without the microphone. So I actually would like to maybe ask a question or make a comment on the comment just made by our chairman about whether or not we need to have calculations in quark-gluon plasma versus nuclei. Now, if I understand anything that my theoretical friends have told us, then when you produce a charm-anti-charm pair at RIC, the nuclei are gone, right? And they're really being produced, if in anything, a bath of gluons,
yeah.
Right? And so it seems to me the issue isn't, is it, you know, some effect of suppression due to the interaction of C-C bar pairs in a nucleus or a quark-gluon plasma, it's whether or not these things are interacting in some non-perturbative distribution of gluons and getting killed, because DEMA says that energetic gluons are very good at breaking up C-C bar pairs, or are they being Debye screened in a typical quark-gluon plasma? And it seems to me that as an experimentalist, I can't answer that question, but I would like to know, when we measure, suppose we don't see a large effect that comes from the final state, and we do see a suppression, what is that telling us? Is it telling us about disassociation due to hard gluons, harder, or is it due to Debye screening?
Let me perhaps make one comment to that. Of course, if you think only about individual nucleons,
only about individual nucleons, a nuclear calculation should definitely differ very much from a quark gluon plasma calculation. Unfortunately, when you go to high temperatures and, for example, near the critical temperature, and if you would have a crossover situation, you would have also collective nuclear effects that can be described in principle in a nuclear picture. I mean, you can then really come from both sides, from, let's say, the very high temperature end, where you would take a quark-gluon plasma description. That should work much better than the nuclear description. You could come from the low temperature end using a collective nuclear model description. That should work better. And somewhere in between, both work
equally badly,
perhaps. If you have a bad model, if you would be a very good theorist, you could make both of them work equally well. But probably Krishna is right, and it becomes too complicated.
Brian's point is you also have to think about non-equilibrium. I mean,
that makes things even worse.
Brian's point is not just hot quark gluon plasma, but high energy initial non-equilibrium gluon fields, in whatever form they take. I mean, that's what you were saying. Yeah.
Okay, I do not see right now any other urgent questions, so thanks our speakers again.
But hang on a second.